What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Teen. 411 Teen is a weekly program for teens, their families, communities, and other interested folks. 411 Teen provides a forum to examine and discuss various issues and events that confront, intersect, and sometimes interrupt our daily lives. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield. According to the 2012 Yoga in America study, some 20 million people practice yoga in America. Yoga for Your Mind and Body by Rebecca Risman introduces yoga to teenagers and explores the positive impact yoga can have on teens' minds and self-confidence. The book focuses on the different benefits of yoga, including stress relief, brain power, meditation, fitness and flexibility, and building strength. We learn how this physical and mental practice can benefit many aspects of a teen's life. From Portland, Oregon, Rebecca Risman, certified yoga instructor and author and editor, joins 411 Teen this hour to explore the benefits of yoga for teens. Rebecca, welcome to 411 Teen.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yoga for Your Mind and Body, a teenage practice for a healthy, balanced life. What was the impetus for writing this book?
I feel like yoga is something that can be helpful for everyone, but it is especially appropriate for teenagers to help them find balance and health in a very hectic, often overscheduled, often very stressful time in their lives.
You say it's helpful for everybody. Why particularly teens?
Teenagers are at this nexus in their lives where, you know, they're confronted with all kinds of new social interactions, physical changes. You know, this is when puberty has taken hold. They're starting to interact with new stresses. Academically, they've got a lot on their plate. Socially, if they're involved in athletics. And yoga is this powerful tool that can help anybody, but especially teens, find balance when all of that is going on. And just in addition to that, it's a really caring, gentle way to work on your physical fitness. For teens, there's so much pressure and so much competition in a lot of areas of physical fitness, and yoga is really the antidote to that.
Okay. Although we talk about the book being directed toward teens, I think anyone wanting to expand their repertoire can benefit from your book. That's what I got from it in looking at it. What was your goal? What was your goal in writing the book?
My goal in writing the book was to help kids, teenagers, or anyone interested in reading, get a little bit of an introduction to what yoga is. Yoga can often be kind of intimidating, especially if you've never known anyone who's done it, never seen a yoga class. I wanted just to sort of teach people what yoga is, where it's from, and the very basics of building a yoga practice on your own. So the book includes some background information, some explanation about what exactly you're doing and why, and then also it's got some really simple step-by-step instructions for different poses, and also kind of includes an explanation for why you would do each pose, why each pose is beneficial.
Okay. Well, I loved the book. I thought the photos were very inviting and real, and I just found the book to be very appealing. So I just wanted to share that with you and let you know that was my response to it.
Oh, thank you.
And I know it was... Go right ahead.
Well, one of our goals when putting this together was to make sure that the book would appeal to all teenage girls. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's a stretch to say that a lot of fitness-oriented materials can alienate some teenage girls by showing, you know, only really idealized models or showing only really advanced postures. And we didn't want to do that with this book. We wanted this book to be something that everybody could open, look at, and say, like, I can see myself in this book. I identify with the girls in this book, and therefore I feel invited to try some of what I see in the book.
Now, I know it was just released. What was it, last month?
What's that?
I said, I know it was just released. When did the book go out?
I'm sorry.
When was the book published and released? Just recently, right?
Sorry, the book came out April 1st.
April, okay. And you may not be able to answer this. I wanted to know, what has been the reception by teen girls? Do you know yet?
It has been wonderful. We've gotten such positive feedback. Most of what people are saying is that they're happy to find a guide that they can read through at home, practice poses on their own without feeling nervous or intimidated in a yoga studio.
Mm-hmm.
I've also, seen girls sitting outside in their front yard doing yoga, looking at the book, following along. It seems to be something that's going over really well and for girls and for their families who might want to be involved in their teen daughter's yoga practice.
Why is your target group girls?
Why is this targeting girls?
Yes.
I think girls have a tough road ahead of them in terms of modern teenage life. In addition to dealing with school, athletics, social pressures, puberty, they also have to deal with the challenge of self-acceptance and body image and learning to love themselves for who they are. And I think yoga is a really, really good tool to work on that. What yoga encourages is for you to feel grateful for the things that you can do. Yoga is not about being the best. There's no winner at yoga. There's no comparison in yoga. There's no reason for you to look at the person practicing next to you in yoga. Your entire practice is contained on your own mat. And I think that's a really good thing for teenage girls to do, is to kind of forget about all of the social pressures and, insecurities and distractions, and just really take time to nurture themselves and feel grateful for what they can do, and not worry about the things that, maybe are more challenging or what the person next to them can do. And I think that that's something that's particularly difficult for teenage girls. It certainly is something that teenage boys struggle with as well. But I think that there are different athletic outlets for boys.
Well, share with us, what is yoga? What does it encompass? Share that,
yoga,
please.
Yoga is an ancient practice, but what it really is it's a combination of focused breath work, which in yoga is often called pranayama. Also includes meditation, which is just a practice of focused thinking, really. And then asana, which is a physical practice. And those are the poses you see people doing. So altogether, yoga is breath work, meditation, and physical poses.
Okay. And who can practice yoga? Can anyone and everyone practice yoga? What are the limitations?
Everyone can practice yoga. Yoga can be done by... There is truly no population of people who cannot do yoga.
Mm-hmm.
I have friends who are yoga teachers that specifically teach in hospital settings. Mm-hmm. So they might work with cancer survivors who are coping with, rough chemo treatment, or they might work with patients that are recovering in a post-op setting, so they might have limited mobility, they might be confined to chairs. You can do yoga if you can't get out of bed. And then on the other end of the spectrum, some yoga is very athletic, very acrobatic. There's partner yoga where, one person is being held aloft by a partner and they're doing, crazy circus like movements. But that's the beauty of yoga, is that there's really yoga for anybody. Yoga can be religious if you want it to be. I know some yoga teachers who teach Catholic yoga, so they incorporate Catholicism into the way that they teach their yoga. Yoga can be musical. I know yoga teachers who teach classes where there's a lot of singing involved.
Mm.
Yoga can be meditative, so it can truly be sitting on a mat with a group of others or by yourself. being completely stationary for an hour. That's kind of the wonderful thing about yoga, is that you can get from yoga whatever you're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not this...
a little of something for, something for everyone.
Yoga is something for, has something for everyone. Absolutely.
Yeah. You mentioned in your book how it can be used as a teaching tool. Would you elaborate on that somewhat? What do you mean? How can it be used?
In a classroom setting?
Yeah.
Yoga can be wonderful. So mm-hmm. before an exam, you might have a classroom full of nervous, anxious students who are tapping their pencils, tapping their feet, waiting for that exam to be passed out. And yoga can be wonderful in that situation. For an educator, they might say, before we take this test, let's all take a break, put down your pencils, make sure your cell phone is put away and it's turned off. Let's all sit with our hands on our desks, closing our eyes, and let's roll your head from side to side. After you've rolled your head from side to side, let's work on releasing the muscles in your jaw. Let's relax the muscles in your low back. Spread your toes out, root down through your heels. All of these simple, small movements are yoga, and they're wonderful at helping relax, reduce tension, and improve focus.
Oh.
And one thing that's actually just recently been studied is that yoga, just a 20-minute session of yoga, can actually improve a student's capacity to remember facts and to concentrate. There was a recent study that compared 20 minutes on the treadmill versus a 20-minute yoga practice. And the people who did yoga did better, retaining facts, concentrating, being able to perform on a test. And so when you think about how that translates into a teenager's life, with the academic rigors that they're facing, yoga can be a really wonderful way to prep for a test or to sort of boost your energy before a presentation.
Well, I know in your book you identified, I think, five steps for de-stressing when you're getting ready to take a test or whatever. We're going to take a brief break, but when we come back, we'll address some of those ways that yoga can be involved in the potential movement and release and growth and strength of one's body. If you're just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield, and joining me is Rebecca Rissman, certified yoga instructor and author of Yoga for Mind and Body, a teenage practice for a healthy, balanced life. Rebecca, how does yoga emphasize the body's potential for movement and release and growth and strength?
Yoga emphasizes all of those wonderful things mm-hmm. about the body in the smallest ways, but in the healthiest ways. So in each yoga pose, we build from the floor up. So whether that's if you're standing on your hands or standing on your feet, each pose starts with the way that you root into the ground and the way your muscles interact mm-hmm. throughout your entire body. So when you're doing a simple standing pose, which is tree pose, which is where you're standing, balancing on one foot with the other foot sort of tucked into the opposite knee.
Mm-hmm.
Each component of that pose is important. So the rooting foot, the lifted leg, the arms extended into the sky, they're all equally important, and they all emphasize different parts of the body and how they're all balanced and interacting. So that's just one yoga pose, but when taken mm-hmm. all together in a practice, flowing through a sequence of poses, working different muscle groups, yoga is really able to empower the practitioner to embrace their body's capacity to do everything.
Now, is yoga something that is practiced daily, multiple times a day, or does it just really depend on the individual?
yoga can be practiced as often as you want. It totally depends on the individual. In some practices of yoga, in some schools of yoga, people are encouraged to practice more often. For example, Ashtanga yoga is a type of more vigorous practice, and a lot of Ashtangi yogis practice 6 times a week. On the other hand, there are different types of yoga for relaxation and restorative yoga, such as yin yoga. Mm-hmm. And those can be done once a week, twice a week, you know, once a month, and still be really beneficial.
The reason I ask is often if you're doing training and exercise, you might want to allow those muscles to kind of rejuvenate. So I didn't know if that was necessary in yoga or just what it involved. Would you recommend a medical clearance before attempting yoga, or can one just basically begin on their own?
So a rule of thumb in yoga is never to do a yoga posture that causes you pain. You might be doing a yoga pose that causes a lot of sensation in terms of like stretching a muscle or challenging a muscle. If there's any kind of underlying medical condition, you would always want to make sure that a physician has given you the okay to go ahead and start a yoga practice.
Mm-hmm.
But in general, a gentle yoga practice is going to be appropriate for almost everybody. And to your point earlier about, you know, do you need to take time to let your muscles rest after a yoga practice? That's going to be sort of dependent upon the individual, but my answer would honestly be no for in a lot of cases because of the way that yoga is practiced. You know, it's very much against yogic philosophy to be just working so hard, you know, mm-hmm. wrecking your muscles, you know, in a lot of sports, you hear phrases like no pain, no gain. You would never hear that in a yoga class because that's not the goal. The goal is to establish a lifelong practice. So you want to be able to listen to your body, push your body, you know, work your muscles, but within limits. You know, you want to still be able to go ahead and have a full day afterwards. You don't want to be so depleted mm-hmm. from your yoga practice that you're exhausted or you're so sore. In a lot of yoga classes, teachers will say, like, we don't necessarily need to see you dripping in sweat, but we would like to see you glow.
Okay. How did you become involved in yoga?
I started practicing yoga in 2001 when I was in college in California. And it was part of my life. I practiced a few times a week, but then when my mom and dad were both diagnosed with cancer within a year of one another in 2008. I kind of had this moment where I realized that I loved yoga. I found so much comfort and healing in yoga.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like facing this sort of family crisis made me aware of that. It made me want to just spend more time doing what I felt really compelled to do, which was spread yoga. And so in 2008, I got certified to become a yoga teacher, and I have been teaching ever since.
What did that certification involve?
It's a little bit different depending on the schools of yoga that you pursue. Mm-hmm. My training involved 200 hours of anatomy study of the history of yoga, study of how to provide safe and effective adjustments to students in mm-hmm. class. So, you know, how to help someone get into a handstand without hurting themselves or hurting you. And then it also involved a pretty extensive study of pranayama, so controlled breath work and also meditation. Each week my yoga class would meet for a half an hour together and meditate as a group, and then each day we were also expected to meditate on our own at home.
Okay. Yoga for your mind and body, a teenage practice for a healthy, balanced life. Rebecca, where can we get that? Someone hears it, they want to buy the book, further explore what you're talking about. Can you tell us where mm-hmm. we can find it?
Yep, you can find it on Amazon.com. You can also find it at Capstone.com.
Okay. Often it's said that yoga focuses on mental reflection rather than physical appearance. And that sounds to me like a perfect prescription for teens who are so often focused on their appearance. That seems like it would be a real drawing card, because you mentioned earlier, they don't have to feel like they're in competition. You know, it's not about how you look. It is about, here they're talking about that mental reflection. Would you elaborate on that or talk about that some?
Absolutely. Most yoga is practiced in a room without mirrors, and that okay. is a deliberate choice on the part of yoga teachers, because we don't want you to be distracted by looking at your reflection in the mirror as you're practicing. The way that you look has nothing to do with the way that you practice your yoga. It doesn't matter what you weigh. It doesn't matter if you have, you know, the new yoga clothes on. It doesn't matter if your makeup is done. What matters is mindfulness and intention on your yoga mat. So how committed are you to your yoga practice? How much are you able to focus on the poses? How controlled is your breath? And how focused is your mind? Those are the things that really contribute to a good yoga practice. And being able to have this judgment-free, very individualized practice that takes place within a group can be really great for teenage girls. You know, there is a community in yoga. You come into a yoga class, and there's a group of people that practice together. But at the same time, your practice is completely your own. It's totally individual. In an ideal classroom, no one is watching you practice other than the teacher. So no one's judging what you're doing or thinking about the way that you're performing your yoga poses. And I think that's a really good environment for a teenage girl to spend some time. You know, physical activity is wonderful, but I think even just the mental exercise of just focusing on yourself, not worrying about anybody else, and then really taking that time to self-nurture is really, really good.
Rebecca, why do so many practitioners of yoga celebrate how it unites mind, body, and spirit? I mean, what is it about yoga that encourages this union?
So the word yoga is actually Sanskrit for to join or to unite. Mm-hmm. And so that's very much a part of the yoga practice, is keeping in mind this idea that you're trying to unite your mind, your body, and your spirit. So in each yoga pose, you're not just holding your limbs in a certain position. You're thinking about how each part of your body is connected. You're breathing through each part of your body, and at the same time, you're trying to calm your thoughts and to focus your mind. So each part of that sort of comes together in this balance. Mm-hmm. And ideally, a yoga practitioner can work on finding balance in their yoga practice and then take that balance out into their daily lives. So after yoga class is over, they might be better equipped to deal with, you know, a stressful biology exam or maybe some social drama that's going on at school, and feel a little bit less overwhelmed by those situations because they're able to breathe deeply, think clearly, and release tension that they might be holding in their body.
Well, you know, stress is a part of life. We all experience, some more than others. But it's basically related to our life's daily changes and pressures. You know, just hassles of going to school, finding a place to park, having an exam, you know, whatever. But there's stress all around us. Many of these stressors can come from school or being a student, and students struggle so much with academic demands and scheduling issues. Did you know that a surprisingly high percentage of college freshmen do not go on to graduate because of stress? I mean, it is a major problem. I say that because how can young folks who are confronted with numerous stressful situations, how can they use yoga to help them? And I know you've talked about it, but just what can they, for those that may be listening and go, wow, that might be something that may help me out, where would you tell them to start?
One of the big things that yoga encourages in everyone who practices it is a sense of mindfulness. And when yoga teachers talk about mindfulness, what we're really talking about is developing the ability to live in the moment. So being really conscious of how you feel right at this moment, how your body feels right now, and also pushing away the thoughts of, you know, did you pay your parking or did you pay for parking? Or, you know, that test that's coming up, or did I make somebody mad at lunch today? So being able to live fully in the present is something that you learn in yoga, and that's something that's so helpful when dealing with stress. You know, yoga can't make your stresses go away, but what yoga can do is help you develop a tool for coping with your stress. People who have a really strong yoga practice are often able to take things one at a time a little bit more easily than others. So, you know, putting just one foot in front of the other, dealing with each stressful, you know, life event as it happens, rather than getting overwhelmed with how stressful life events can pile up in the future or how did I handle some events that recently transpired.
Often it's said, and we've kind of touched on this, that yoga focuses on the mental reflection. You know, we don't look at that physical. And therefore, it feels like yoga may be a very individual kind of thing. There's no competition. You don't have to worry about your appearance. You don't have to worry about your weight. None of that matters, right?
Absolutely.
Okay.
It's entirely individual. Your practice is your own practice.
And I think that I asked you that again because I think it's important for the listening audience to hear that, that this is something that's about you and where you're at, what you're about, and just kind of tuning out, I guess, the world and focusing on you.
Absolutely. And, you know, so far I've talked quite a bit about going to yoga classes, but a huge part of yoga is practicing on your own. And this is one way that this book can be really handy, is that all you really need to practice yoga is a quiet space with a flat surface to practice on and a little bit of guidance. And so this book can be used at home in your bedroom, your living room, your basement. And that's a really good, safe place to start with yoga, is just following along, you know, with a book or with a YouTube tutorial, or even just, you know, going through Instagram and following yoga teachers on Instagram, looking at the poses they're doing, and trying them out on your own. Practicing at home or home practice is a really good way to get comfortable with yoga, and it's also a really good way to sort of explore areas that feel good to you, that are a little bit more challenging, just to get an idea of your strengths and the areas that you might want to work a little bit more on. If you do find something that's a little bit more challenging, that's a great invitation to sort of work on that pose more often or find more poses that work those same muscle groups. The book also encourages girls to keep a yoga journal where they can write about how their yoga practice is going, record the poses they're working on, and maybe write a little bit about how they feel about the poses. And one of the things that's so great about keeping a yoga journal is your yoga practice can develop so quickly over time that, you know, within just a few weeks, you might flip back to your early pages of journaling and notice how much has changed. You know, you might be so much more flexible, or a pose that felt really intimidating when you first started might be getting a little bit easier, or might even be easy. And that kind of growth is something that's wonderful to celebrate. You know, yoga isn't a competition. There is no winner. But it can encourage you to feel grateful for your body and to feel good about yourself when you when you're able to grow in some poses, when you're able to perhaps move from a basic pose to maybe an intermediate or a more advanced pose.
What's the basic gear that one would need? I mean, like, in other words, I know there are yoga mats and there's the block and the belt, and just what are the basics that one would need as a beginner yoga student?
The truth is, you don't need anything. You just need a flat floor.
Okay.
A yoga mat is helpful. Mm-hmm. It's just a sticky rubber mat. But truly, you don't need it. Yoga can be often cost prohibitive. Mm-hmm. A lot of yoga classes are expensive, and yoga clothes can often be really pricey. And the truth is, the dirty secret is that you don't need any of that. What you really just need is a clear area on the floor, and a little bit of motivation to practice. Things like a yoga block, a bolster, and a strap, and your yoga mat can make a practice easier, but you really don't need them. And honestly, I've been practicing yoga for 15 years, and I oftentimes just use a book instead of a block if I'm practicing in my bedroom. I use a belt instead of a yoga strap. And I usually do use a yoga mat, but not always.
You're tuned in to 411 Teen. I'm talking with Rebecca Rissman, and we're talking about yoga for young folks. We're going to take a brief break, but we'll get right back at you. This is 411 Teen, and I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield, and joining me via phone is Rebecca Rissman in Portland, Oregon. Rebecca has been sharing the benefits of yoga, particularly in the teenage population. Yoga has something for everyone. Rebecca, are there different types of yoga? You hear so much about that. Would you elaborate?
There are many different types of yoga. There are different schools of yoga that come from different teachers or gurus. And then there are also just classes that cater to different populations. So there are oftentimes classes called, like, power yoga or yoga for athletes. There's classes called restorative yoga or yin yoga, and those are both a little bit more relaxing, a little bit less challenging. But you're browsing a schedule at a gym or a yoga studio, you can find anything from yoga for kids to yoga for Catholics to yoga for elderly people, yoga for people recovering from injuries. There's yoga for everyone.
Mm-hmm. Okay. How important, in looking at yoga, how important is warming up before you engage?
Yes, warming up is very important in yoga. And typically that's done early in class through a series of poses that are called the sun salutations. And these are just a sequence of different yoga poses that work up some of your larger muscles, so they'll help you sort of warm up. And they also increase your heart rate to get blood pumping. And they also serve the purpose of sort of helping you to focus. So let's say you got to yoga and you were having trouble letting go of some of the outside distractions, you know, school, social stuff. Going through a few sun salutations can help you focus your mind on your yoga practice.
Well, I tell you, I really enjoyed and found it really helpful the step-by-step instructions in your book. And I think it would be easy for anyone to get that book, read it, and to become a student of yoga. So again, it was well written. Share with the audience again the contact, where you get it. Yoga for Your Mind and Body, A Teenage Practice for a Healthy, Balanced Life by Rebecca Rissman.
You can find it at Amazon.com and Capstone.com.
Okay. Rebecca, explain to us, because you were talking about different poses. Will you explain to us about the different poses and how does one best utilize them?
Sure. In each different pose that's explained in the book, you'll find photos alongside step-by-step directions and also some helpful graphic tools that sort of emphasize the parts of the body you want to focus on. They might point out, you know, keep the legs straight or flex your foot. So if you're going through the book, starting either in a seated or standing position, following each direction, you can do this in front of a mirror if you find that helpful, or you can do it without a mirror if you find that a mirror is a little bit distracting for you. And take your time as you go through each direction and you follow along. If the direction says, you know, extend your right leg, take your time doing that. Make sure that it feels okay. Notice which muscles you're working. And when the directions say something specific, like flex your foot or point your kneecap up toward the ceiling, make sure that you're following those because they're important to keep your muscles safe, but they're also important in the overall alignment of the pose. Some poses can be tweaked so easily by just simply rotating your arm in a certain way or, you know, flexing your foot in a certain way. And it can totally change the outcome of the pose, you know, where you feel the stretch in your back or how the pose feels in your neck. And they can be really small adjustments, but they're also really important to pay attention to.
Okay. In your book, you offer 5 tips for de-stressing before a big test. Would you share those tips and the steps involved with 411 Teen and my audience?
Yes.
Oh, thank you.
Sorry.
Oh, no problem. No problem. I just think that whole distressing before a test can be really beneficial. And not just for a test, for maybe older individuals who may have a presentation, whatever. But just the fact of de-stressing and those tips could be very helpful.
Okay.
Well, while you're doing that, as we look at stress, you know, stress is often manifested in physical symptoms like back and neck problems and fatigue and headache. Are there particular poses that you do to counteract these specific physical symptoms?
Absolutely. So there are a group of yoga poses that are helpful for helping to de-stress, and those are poses that involve gentle twists and lying on your back. The reason for this is when you're laying on your back, obviously, that's a restorative, relaxing place to be, and oftentimes when you're lying on your back, you can be encouraged to close your eyes, and just removing that visual stimulus can be really helpful in focusing, calming down, forgetting about everything that's going on around you. And then also just the gentle twisting is a good way to focus your energy. So twists are oftentimes used to energize, but if you can take it just a little bit more gently, a little slower, you can sort of cultivate your energy in a way that can then be useful.
Okay. Did you find those tips, those 5 tips for de-stressing?
Sorry, I have a digital copy of this.
Oh, okay. All right.
You know what page it was on?
No, I don't. I just noted that and I thought, wow.
I know it's in here. I wrote it. I think it was like relaxing your jaw, rolling your head, but
That's all right. No problem. As far as the length, how long, and I don't mean...
I got it.
Oh, okay. All right. Share those with us, please.
So you wanted just to talk about the 5?
Yeah, I thought that would be beneficial.
Yeah, I mean, so the book includes a relaxation checklist, which can be helpful for anybody getting ready to take an exam or do a presentation, but can also be really helpful for all kinds of situations in life. If you're nervous before a date, if you have a job interview. Basically, what the book explains is ways to physically release from places that you're holding on to tension. So the first step is just to unclench your jaw. Very few people recognize that they walk around throughout the day with their teeth clenched, you know, and their tongue pressed up against the roof of their mouth. Doing something as simple as dropping your tongue away from the roof of your mouth and making a little bit of space between your teeth, so just dropping your lower jaw just a tiny bit, can have a huge impact on the way that you are approaching a stressful situation. The second bullet in this checklist is just to release the muscles in your shoulders. And the way to do this is just to take your shoulder blades and bring them down towards your tailbone. So just dropping your shoulders away from your ears. It lengthens the muscles in your neck. And again, this is something that people don't recognize that they're doing when they're feeling stressed, is their shoulders start to creep up, up, up towards their ears. And before you know it, your back and shoulders are just a tight knot of muscles. The third bullet point is to relax the muscles in your low back. This is another one of those unconscious reactions to stress for most people. In fact, it can even be something that can affect the way that you sleep. A lot of people, when they lay down at night, have some low back pain. And this is something that is oftentimes related to holding tension there during the day, during stressful situations. You know, sitting in traffic, worrying about grades on a test, while you're sitting in a classroom chair, you might be clenching the muscles in your low back. So if you're able to just sort of arch your back and do little hip circles to release the muscles that you've got just above your pelvis and your low back, that can be really, really helpful. The fourth bullet point in this checklist is just to gently rock your head from side to side to release the muscles in your neck. And again, the neck is this place where we hold on to so much tension. And
the neck and the shoulders, both, yeah. I was just saying the neck and the shoulders, both, you know, we hold so much tension there.
Absolutely. And it's something that we very rarely think about, but it's also something that's so easy to release. You know, just simply bringing your right ear to your right shoulder and then bringing your left ear to your left shoulder and then dropping your chin to your collarbone. Those are easy, simple movements, and they can be so beneficial. And then the last bullet point is, again, about dropping your tongue away from the roof of your mouth. That's something I emphasize almost all the time in my yoga class because so many people do it so unconsciously that I might say, drop your tongue away from the roof of your mouth, and by the time I've finished saying it, half the people in the class have, again, pressed their tongue up against the roof of their mouth again because they have already forgotten, or they're unconsciously doing it again.
Well, I thank you for sharing those tips because those are tips that I think just in listening to you, you could remember one or two of them and, you know, not have the book, not have anything, but it may be very helpful in de-stressing.
Exactly.
Yeah, so I appreciate
it. Something that if you're having trouble sleeping at night, you can go through this checklist, and this can be a wonderful way to relax before bed. Even as you're laying in bed, going through this checklist can help you get much more comfortable and perhaps let go of some tension that you're holding onto that might be keeping you from sleep.
Is it important to set goals in yoga?
Goals in yoga can be wonderful. However, you want to make sure that the goals that you set are nurturing and are going to encourage you to continue to practice. So what I mean by that is a good goal for yoga might be to try to focus on your breath for the whole class or to try to feel grateful for your body during the class or to think only positive thoughts about your day. An idea or an example of a goal that's not as great to set in yoga is I want to do a handstand today. And the reason, you know, that's not a great goal is it's performance oriented and that's not really what yoga is about. That's just taking into account one of the three parts of yoga, the physical part. And when you do that, you can sort of forget about how important it is to think about your breath and also to work on cultivating mindfulness. And those are the other two parts of yoga.
I have seen here in Tallahassee what they call hot yoga. What is that? Do you know?
Well, hot yoga is exactly what it sounds like. It's
yoga
that's practiced in a heated room. And there are different kinds of hot yoga.
Mm-hmm.
One kind is called Bikram, and that is a practice developed by a teacher named Bikram. And other types are just typically vinyasa yoga or power yoga that are practiced in warm rooms. And the rooms can be anywhere from 85 to 105 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
Hot yoga can be really great. You know, it encourages you to sweat. It is a good way to open your muscles a little bit faster than in a cool room. However, it's also a really challenging practice. You know, it's obviously the room is really warm, and oftentimes the practices are a little bit more athletic. So anyone who is hoping to develop a hot yoga practice, I think, would want to start with practice in an unheated room,
mm-hmm.
sort of develop a little bit of a familiarity with the poses and with how yoga goes before moving into a hot room.
You talk about how yoga is so beneficial and building self-confidence, particularly in young women who are unsure and uncertain. Would you talk some about how yoga aids in building self-confidence?
Absolutely. Yoga is an individual practice. It doesn't matter what the person next to you is doing. It matters what you are doing on your own mat. And I think one of the biggest parts of being a self-confident person is having an understanding that you are in control of your own actions and behaviors. So after a long yoga practice where, you know, you've gone through a series of poses, you've focused on your breath, and you've meditated, that's an hour of empowering, balanced activity that you've just done for yourself. And I think being able to devote that time to your own health and well-being is a really good way to become empowered to take on the world outside of the yoga,
mm-hmm.
of your yoga studio. So, also, I feel like when you practice yoga regularly and you learn new poses and you grow stronger and more flexible, you can become sort of empowered to try new things. You know, maybe when you first start yoga, you see people doing headstands in the middle of the room, and that can be really intimidating. But after, you know, a few months or years of practice, you might feel equipped and strong and confident enough to try that headstand. And, you know, it's a great feeling of accomplishment if you can mm-hmm. work towards a pose and perform it safely and in a controlled manner. And then, you know, feel like the accomplishment of that.
Okay.
And the other thing that's wonderful about yoga is no one's watching you, so you can try that headstand, and if it doesn't go the way that you think it's going to go, it doesn't matter. You're the only person that knows what just happened in your headstand. And so
right.
you can walk around on the street after class thinking, like, I feel great about the headstand I did in class
mm-hmm.
today. Or you could also walk around and think, oh, I fell down in yoga today. But no one knows, and it's okay.
In this last minute, what about injuries? I guess they would be analogous to sports injuries. What kind of injuries does one need to ward against?
So the cardinal rule in yoga is to never do a pose that causes you pain.
Okay.
So you might do a pose that causes you or that makes you feel intense sensation in terms of flexibility or muscle challenge. There are, people do get injured in yoga, and it's when they're not listening to their own bodies. So trying a pose that is perhaps advanced or that is something that's not really accessible to them in terms of flexibility or strength.
I'm going to have to interrupt you. We are at the end. Thank you so much for all the information you have conveyed. To my listening audience, tune in next week, same time, same place, to get the 411 on 411 Teen. This edition of 411 Teen was produced by Dr. Liz Hollyfield. Technical assistant, Ken Smith. Audio copies are available, and if you want to participate in 411 Teen or have suggestions for discussion topics, call 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. If you would like to subscribe to 411 Teen Podcast, log in wfsu.org. Check us out on Facebook.